Thank you. I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to give this talk in this conference. And we talk about this a joint work with Pavel Mardesik and Jordi Vidal-Prat, which has appeared to Discrete and Continuous Dynamical Systems. This is the reference. And the plan of the talk is a brief introduction of the global problem, say, and after that, the reduction to a local setting, and the main theorem, temporal normal form for meromorphic vector fields, and the asymptotic expansion of the Dulac time. And in the last part of the talk, we discussed some ideas of the proof of these theorems, in particular the tools and techniques used in it. And if we have time, I discuss also the proof of these tools. So we begin with a vector field, a polynomial vector field in the plane, so that it has a meromorphic extension to the compatible plane, to the projective plane. And we consider such a vector field that have a center at a point O with a period annulus bounded by some polycycle P that can be, in general, can contain as a component the line at infinity of the projective plane. Then we consider a transverse section of this vector field, such parameterized by the unit interval, open unit interval, such that the limit of this parametrization exists when S tends to zero, and this is the center, and the limit of as S tends to one also exists and belongs to the polycycle. So the situation is something like that. Here we have the center, the period annulus, and the polycycle. We have some singularities. The parametrization of the transverse section is here, and we consider this kind of situation. Then, if that is that point is sigma of S, we consider the period of this orbit from this point along of the period of associated to this vector field y. Then the main goal is to know the qualitative behavior of this period function, this function is something like that, and what we want to know the qualitative behavior. This is completely done by the critical points of this function, the period function. So we are interested in these critical periods. The finiteness period analog of the Dulac Karl Ilyashenko theorem for limit cycles, the series of the Poincaré return map, is that it is the finiteness of the critical periods was stated by Mardesik and Saavedra in the hyperbolic case, that when the polycycle is hyperbolic, all the singularities appearing in the polycycle are hyperbolic saddles. Then the next step in this study is to consider a family depending on parameters, and study its corresponding bifurcation diagram, how the critical periods collide or bifurcate as the parameter moves. When we are interested in critical periods bifurcating from the center, in general, we have and we have that the period function at the center is regular, so that it can be expanded in Taylor series, in power series, and the coefficients of these powers, this power of S, give us all the relevant information about the bifurcation of critical periods near the center. And then the following thing is to do the same approximation in the polycycle level. The problem is that the period function at this level is not analytic, and this is not a Taylor expansion at this point. So we need to introduce a suitable asymptotic expansion for the period function here. And this expansion must be uniform with respect to the parameter in order to deduce consequence about bifurcation. If we have only a asymptotic expansion which is valid only for each individual parameter, this is not sufficient for deduce global information about the bifurcation diagram. Now we go to the local setting. We reduce the complexity of the global problem using the blowing up technique that says that any polycycle can be in a way complicated, adding new components, exceptional components, blowing up the singularity, so that the polycycle has more components, but the singularities that appear in the intersection of two components are simpler. More precisely, they are saddles, there is saddle or resonant, or saddle nodes. In the sequel, we restrict our attention to the case of hyperbolic polycycles. After blowing up, all the singularities have hyperbolic saddles. This, as I have said, one of these components in the projective plane can be the line at infinity, so that when we consider the polynomial vector field in this other chart, they have poles along the line of infinity, and if we blow up a singularity, a degenerate singularity at the line of infinity, these poles can be propagated to other components, but also maybe appear some zeros, because when we blow up a singularity, appear zeros of when we blowing up a regular a non-meromorphic vector field, they appear zeros of on the exceptional component. So maybe these two behaviors appear together. So the local setting is the following. We consider a vector field Y, but what comes from the polynomial situation, but when we regard it from the infinity after blowing up some singularities, appear some polar or zero monomial here along the separatrix that we can assume that they are the axis X and Y, whose exponents M and N are integers in general. And This is the polar zero part, and here is the vector field that has an isolated singularity at the origin, the intersection of the two separatists. And the assumption about the saddle is that we can normalize by dividing by a constant, so that the first coefficient times 6 evaluated at the origin is 1, and the second coefficient, the opposite of the second coefficient evaluated at the origin, is lambda of mu is positive, and is called the hyperbolicity ratio of the saddle. So this is the situation, the local setting. The idea is to consider also here some auxiliary transverse sections and consider this situation here. Where X mu is like that. This is the local setting. Let me introduce an illustrative example. We consider this quadratic vector field depending on a parameter mu in the real line. And when this parameter is in this interval, the phase portrait of this vector field is like that. Here's the origin, and L1 is the line x equal to 1. We have the line at infinity, and also we have an algebraic curve. It is a conic C that has this equation. And this is the period annulus inside the conic. And this singularity at infinity, the polycycle is just the conic, but they have a singularity at infinity, which is very degenerate, and we need two blow-ups to desingularize it. After these two blow-ups, we train two exceptional divisors, E1, E2, and the conic arrives to the middle to E1, at that singularity S1, and the intersection of E1, E2 is the another saddle point. These two saddles have hyperbolicity ratios given by that. The first one depends on mu, and the second one is fixed these two. And each part of we can divide this diagram in two parts, and each part is of this type. So this situation is the basic building block to give to obtain a global asymptotic expansion of the period function at the polycycle. Local setting, again, we recall the notations. V is the monomial. It contains the poles and the zeros along the separatices. And we consider two cross sections at the two separatices that we use to define the Dulac time of this situation, the local situation. The Dulac time is the time for the vector field y to go from here to here. So this time is given by this integral. This is the time form of the vector field integrated along the integral curve, the integral arc of the vector field y, or x, in this case, is the same. So, in order to study this integral, this time, this Dirac time, we can change the coordinates in order to simplify both the Amir coefficient, Amir coefficient here in the integral, and also the expression of the integral curve. Which means change of coordinates, simplifying that. Precise this in the following definitions. An unfolding of vector fields can be thought as a single vector field in a greater space. The R2, for an unfolding of vector fields in the plane, we can consider as a vector field in the product of R2 times Rm, where m is the dimension of the parameter space, such that the orbits of this new vector field are contained in the planes mu equal to constant. Now, two vector fields in Rn are circa conjugated near a point P0 if there is a local diffeomorph field of class CK defined in a neighborhood of this point, such that phi star of sit equal W, where phi star means the differential of phi minus 1 applied to the vector field set evaluated in phi of P. This is a pullback of the vector field. And two unfoldings are said CK conjugated if they are conjugated as a vector fields by a diffeomorph field that preserve the planes mu equal constant. So in this form, this will be used implicitly in the sequel. Now we fix a parameter, and we fix its hyperbolicity ratio, lambda zero, and it is well known that the regular part of the unfolding is infinite conjugated to a function times the linear part if this lambda zero is not rational, and it's equivalent, it's conjugated to a function times this other expression when the hyperbolicity ratio is rational, T over Q, with this condition. This is the orbital normal form of a saddle linearizable or resonant, the orbital normal form. Orbital because allow to divide by this coefficient F in this form. And finally, the last definition I need is the orbital codimension of x mu zero is infinite in the first case, in the linear case, in the linear saddle case, and the infimum, in fact, is the order of this series when in the second case. Now the main theorem is the following. We consider a infinite unfolding as before, a regular one, x mu of a saddle point. We consider the polar zero monomial B, and we fix a parameter. Then the unfolding, the meromorphic unfolding I mu, is circa conjugated near the origin and this parameter to this normal form. Here we have the orbital normal form. The orbital normal form of the saddle, and here we have the polar monomial, and this part that cannot be in general removed. Where these two polynomials, where P and Q are polynomials, and they are zero if the hyperbolicity ratio of mu zero is not rational, and all polynomials in the rational monomial u x to the p y to the q when lambda zero is p over q, and L is an integer appearing in this denominator. What is the minimum of betas such that beta times pq is greater than mn, where mn are the exponents or the polar monomial. For any k, there exists a such normal form. Yes. Moreover, so this integer L can be positive or negative, because M and N maybe both are negative. If M and N are both negative, then we have zeros in the this is a zero factor on the unfolding. And but if one of them is greater or equal than zero, then beta then L is strictly positive. This is a partial order. That means that the two components verify the inequality. Moreover, if the codimension of this vector field is finite, then the degree of P and Q can be bounded in this way. If not, if the codimension is infinite, then the thing is that this two polynomial, the degree, depends on the k of the conjugation. So in the infinite codimensional case, the degree of P and Q can be as greater as we want with the k of the conjugation. Okay. So the application of this to the Dirac time is easy to see, because we need to integrate the inverse of this denominator. So we integrate this expression, which is polynomial. Polynomial, no, it's a Lorentz polynomial. It's a finite sum of linear combinations of terms of this type, of monomial of this type. So the problem has been simplified. And here phi denotes the flow of the normal form, of the regular normal form that has been studied by several authors before, for instance Roussary, to study the asymptotic expansion of the Poincaré-Dulac map for studying limit cycles. So we use their expansion also in the parametrization of the integral arc. So the consequence for the Dirac time is the following. We assume that n is positive, and this is because if the two exponents are negative, means that we are in a zero coefficient here. But this only occurs when we are blowing up a finite singularity. A singularity that is not in the line of infinity. So in this case, when we have a finite singularity at the polycycle, it is well known that the time function, the period function, grows to infinity when we approach to the polycycle. and this growth to infinity is monotone. So for in this case, we need no asymptotic expansion to do that. So we assume that at least one of the two exponents is negative. We have a pole, and exchanging the coordinates if necessary, we can assume that the first one, the n is positive, poles along y, poles of nothing, but okay, this is the first assumption. The second assumption is less natural, but it's simplified the expression. The second assumption is these two transverse sections are taking just the corresponding these two just transverse sections is taken like that in some combinable coordinates. These coordinates are the one that brings the original vector field to the normal form. So we work in this situation. Then we fix a parameter such that the ratio of the probability is rational. If not is rational, the situation is more simpler, and that's been treated before. And we introduce this function alpha of mu p minus lambda of mu q that have a zero in mu zero, and we introduce this function omega s alpha with this expression, which is the Eckel-Russell compensator. And then the theorem is for all k, we have an uniform asymptotic expansion of the Dulac time, such that if we evaluate this Dulac time at s to the q to simplify the expression, we obtain this form. A logarithmic term, power series, or power polynomial, and a polynomial in sp and sp omega, where omega is an unfolding of the logarithm. Moreover, the coefficient at zero, the logarithmic term, is this constant if there are no exponents, if this does not appear, and there is no logarithmic term otherwise. A and B are polynomials whose coefficients are rational function on the coefficients of p mu and q mu of the temporal normal form. And these rational functions have no poles in these parameters. It's not good. And we have also a condition about the order of B and the value of the coefficient of A. So that the idea is when PQ and MN are not collinear, the order, the first order here is at least is to MQ or is to PN omega. And CK is a Kafka function that is equal to zero. We have this asymptotic expansion with a K-flat reminder, what means that the R derivative of this function is bounded by a constant times the absolute value of S to the power K minus R for each R from 0 to K. This condition allows to derivate this asymptotic expansion in order to obtain consequence of the bifurcation of critical periods uniform with respect to the parameter. Well, the sketch of the proof of this theorem is using the normal form. We have only to deal with this kind of integrals of monomials xy, yz, evaluated in the flow and integrated from 0 to minus log of s with this exponent ij. So the work of Roussary shows that the first one is trivial. The component x of the flow is that, and the second one is not trivial. It's the monomial, the rational monomial evaluated on the flow has this expansion in S, where GK are functions with these estimates, and of this form, where GK bar minus 1 is a polynomial in capital omega, this function, and from here we deduce that the y component of the flow has this expression that can, and the g power of the e component of the flow can be expanded in this form, where that are also polynomials in capital omega, and there are also estimates of the same type of the GK for bar. So the idea is to multiply this expression with the corresponding expression for x, and we have a series that we integrate term by term. So we have this expression. So two things. First of all, this expression is convergent. It's a convergent series because the general term is bounded by a geometrical series, where Cs is not a constant. Is something that depends on S, but is so little as we want, as S tends to 0. So we have that this series is convergent. And on the other hand, if K is large enough, then we have these estimates from these ones, and says that and here appear an explicit coefficient depending on mu, that on alpha, that for alpha equal to 0 is positive. So we if we move a little the parameter mu, this continues being positive. So for k large enough, that is k flat. So in this expression, in this series, we can truncate this series so that for any k exists a mk such that all that is k flat. So we have deal with a finite number of expressions of this type, and this kind of expressions we make a change of variables using the W equal to capital omega, we can write then in this form, and integrating by parts and using that this expression is s to the minus alpha, we obtain that this is a polynomial in omega and s power 1 over q. So this is the sketch of the proof of this of the asymptotic expansion of the dual time. So now I want to explain a little the ideas or techniques used in the proof of the theorem A of the temporal normal form, and the first one is the orbital normal form, which is a well-known first result one form in the literature. It's a part of the folklore, mathematical folklore on this subject. But we have found some troubles in the proofs, and I would like to comment some details that are interesting. So this is the statement of the temporal the orbital normal form that we found, for instance, in the Russari or Ilyashenko Yakovenko papers. And the second tool is this lemma. It's not difficult, that says that once we have the orbital normal form, we have changed the coordinates to have the orbital normal form, we made a supplementary change of coordinates that preserves this normal form, this orbital normal form, but changes the time. This is the idea. So that this, for any family of function f mu vanishing at the origin, there is a family of diffeomorphisms phi such that the pullback of the meromorphic family is the regular one divided by the polar monomial plus this x mu acting as a derivation on this function b, the polar monomial times the original functions given in the statement. In fact, these local diffeomorphisms are obtained following the flow of x at a variable time, depending on the point. So this is a well-defined diffeomorphism near the origin if this function vanishes at the origin. And in fact, this capital F, the variable time function of the point, can be deduced from the little f in this way, by this formula. So this is the statement of the lemma. And well, this family of diffeomorphisms depends on the family of the unfolding y and the function f. So we use this notation. In the first tool, the proof is I recall what it means that a function depending of several variables is n flat with respect to two of them, for instance. That means that the norm of the total I differential of f, thought as a symmetric I multilinear form, what is the maximum of all the derivatives of order y of the function, is bounded by a constant times the norm of x y to the power n minus y, this n flat with respect to x y. And the n flatness with respect to x and y individually is defined analogously, replacing the norm by the absolute value of x or y, respectively. So the first theorem says that if we have an unfolding x mu as before, then we fix a parameter, and for each k, there exists an n, which depends on k, lambda 0, m, and n only, such that all family of n flat functions, for all family of n flat functions h, the homological equation, this one, modified with this factor b here and here, has a family of CK solutions f mu. So if that is n flat, implies that there exists f CK. This is the result in a neighborhood of this point. And more precisely, the value of this n can be taken in this form, this explicit form. And this is the first tool used in the proof. Now, the proof of the temporal normal form is as follows. We fix k, the order of the differentiability of the conjugation, and we fix also the parameter, and we take n associated to this data. From theorem 1, for any S greater than n, there is a CS diffeomorphism phi0 such that brings the original unfolding y to a y1, a new one, that only improves the orbital part. Only the orbital part is achieved, the x and f. But there is a cofactor that we write in the denominator in this way, where r is vanish at the origin. It's a 1 plus r is a unity. So this is the theorem 1, is the orbital part. From lemma 2, if we take that, we take this diffeomorphism given by lemma 2, we obtain that the new denominator is all that. So what we want is to kill this part, R. So we can choose F1 so that kill this part. This is the idea. So we need to see what is the image of the derivation X and F acting on this space of polynomials, Lorentz polynomials in XY. And it's easy to check that this axiom is given by that, so that the a supplementary subspace of the image of this is polynomials in U starting at L. That is the first monomial from B. So there exists, this shows that there exists a polynomial F1 fixed y such that all this term here is of the form the supplementary here minus a flat function. B times a flat function. We have a polynomial chain of coordinates that brings that to the normal form with a remainder term flat. And by theorem 3, from this n flat function, there is a second solution of this the homological equation by theorem 3. But this k is the original k because n was that we have taken. So by lemma 2, again, we obtain this new term here that vanishes with that. So we obtain the desired temporal normal form in the general case. But this shows that this polynomial Q has many monomials up to order as monomials up to order n. So it's a long polynomial that depends and increase very large g in function as a function of k. So This is not the best result. So in the finite codimensional case, we can make a supplementary chain of coordinates so that we can reduce the degree of Q. The degree of P is already bounded by theorem 1 in the finite codimension case, and the degree of Q is bounded using this kind of techniques, which essentially are the Weierstrass preparation theorem. This is the main technique. The rest are technicalities. Okay. So the sketch of the proof of the orbital normal form is as follows. We consider the vector space of homogeneous vector fields of a fixed degree H, and we fix a linear vector field L, and we consider a Lie bracket map from VH to VH, and we consider also a supplementary subspace of the image of this map. For instance, we can take for supplementary subspace the kernel of the map here. And we recall the Poincaré procedure that we have a vector field having a linear part and a perturbation of degree H, and we search a diffeomorphism starting at the identity plus degree H perturbation also, and we compute the pullback, and we obtain the linear part and in order H this part. So the idea is all that is in the image of this map can be removed. And for instance, when L is of this type, then this kind of homogeneous vector fields are eigenvalues, like that, with these eigenvectors, with these eigenvalues. So when lambda is E over G, we obtain the zero eigenvalue, and we have a term that cannot be removed from here. So the Takens normal form is for any n, there exists a polynomial diffeomorphism constructed as before, such that the pullback of the vector field is the linear part plus a sum where each part, each homogeneous part, is in the supplementary subspace, and a net n flat remainder. And it is well known also that this technique to kill the remainder part is if this homological equation, the unknown is sit of T, which is a vector field depending on a supplementary parameter T, as a solution, then the flow of this vector field, of the solution, conjugate x to x plus r. So this is the idea. And there is existence and regularity of the solution of this homological equation, but in a very precise way. For any k, there exists an n which depends on k and on x, such that if this difference is n flat, then the two are CK conjugate. But the problem is the dependence of n on x. So the delicate point is how is the dependence of n on x? Because we start with x and k, as in the theorem, and we choose an n1 and put the new x, the pullback from the polynomial diffeomorphism of the Takens normal form. And this has a normal form n1, say, plus an n1 flat remainder. But If this M1 is greater than the corresponding N from the of K, fixed K, and this new vector field, then all is okay and we have finished. But if not, we must choose N2 greater than this value and iterate this recurrence. So for this new N2, we consider the Takens normal form associated to N2, and we have a new vector field here, and this vector field has associated a new N. If the N2, the order of flatness of this remainder 2 is greater than the required for this vector field, then all is okay. If not, this process begins another way, and it's not clear that this finishes at a finite number of steps. In fact, Ruzzani works in the situation when k and n are infinity, but his proof applies when k is finite. But in that case, if one reads the proof, one see that this number depends on the norm of x, and the norm of this x of the Takens normal forms a priori is not bounded, it's not clear. So this is a delicate point here. Lysenko and Yakovenko have an interesting solving about normal forms. We have read it at NTLV, but this point is not very, don't pay too much attention to that. And finally, we found the right answer in a paper of Samovol, which says that this n depends only on the linear part, or can be taken depending only on the linear part of the vector field x, which remains fixed along all the process. So this is okay, but the bad news is that the proof is very technical and difficult to follow. Well, the proof of lemma 2 is the system of diffeomorphism which the system of diffeomorphism phi does that. It's straightforward. In a first time, we show that given little f, there exists capital F given by this functional equation. This is the implicit function theorem, essentially. After that, there are this formula for a regular vector field, for a regular family made of poles. And this formula is easy to check in the case in a flow box. So it's true in general coordinates. We apply this formula to the F mu obtained from the original family little f. So this equality is equivalent to this one, and we compute this one, and we obtain what we want. And finally, the sketch of the proof of the field theorem, the existence of solution of the B homological equation. If the H is n flat, then there exists a solution f little f of class ck. This is the statement of theorem 3. So the idea is to search the solution in this form, like this integral, from infinity to zero, plus minus infinity to zero, of flat term evaluated on the flow and integrated. It's a moyennisation, a mean of H along the ellipse. And then the classical argument shows that the derivative of x along the flow is h. If h is n flat, then we want that F, capital F, will be equal to d times a second function f. So the idea is to reduce to the case when x is in orbital normal form, because changing the coordinates we can pass the one solution to another. And the second idea here is to this function capital F be well defined, we need that the flow of the vector field is defined all the time. We need a complete vector field. So we consider a bump function like that, and we, with this estimate, and we globalize the normal form, orbital normal form vector field by multiplying by this bump function. So we obtain a global vector field now, which is, because it is linear outside a ball, and so its flow is globally defined. So the first part can be considered. The second point is that H itself may be definite in all R2. So we multiply the function H by also the bound function. So in this with this modification, we have a global situation. We have a complete vector field and a global function and flat also, and we can consider this F, capital F, modified by epsilon. Moreover, we can decompose the flat function H, the new one, but in two terms. Each of them is n flat, where m is the r and a half of n, with respect to x and y respectively. And we define this function capital F integrating in from minus infinity to zero of the flat function with respect to x, and integrate to zero to plus infinity of the flat function with respect to y. And this is a computation that we evaluated the polar monomial evaluated on the flow, verifies this differential equation, and then we have this expression, and using that we obtain that the little f that we want to show that this is of class CK, it is an all solution, is this difference of integrals where this function is this exponential times that, and that is the flat function evaluated in the flow times this exponential. And now from the variational equation of x and the Gronwald's lemma follows that if we have estimates of the differential of x, then we can bound the e-differential of the flow in a suitable neighborhood of the parameter space. And on the other hand, using estimates for the product of functions and derivatives of the product of function and composition and exponential and all that, we obtain that the e derivatives of the functions J1, J2 that appear before in the definition of the solution has this verify this estimate. So we have a flatness condition on x and y, and the more important thing is the exponential that appears in red, because this exponent controls the fact that these differentials are integrable in the intervals defining the solution. So if we restrict sufficiently the neighborhood of the parameter mu zero that we have fixed, then these two functions are respectively positive and negative, because in the point are so. And this is so because the choice of the n on the theorem. So in this case, we show that these functions are integrable in these two intervals, and by classical theorems of analysis, this shows that this f is of class ck in a neighborhood. Well, it's of class ck in a neighborhood of the parameter space small enough, and this f is a true solution of the original problem in a small ball depending on epsilon, and this is solved.